All right. Good morning and welcome. My name is Christine Park Gonzalez. I'm with the EEOC's Los Angeles District Office, and I work as a program analyst in charge of outreach, training, and press relations. So I have spoken with many of you over the phone and via email, so thank you very much for coming. I am your press contact. So you'll be hearing today from officials from the Los Angeles office, Rosa Viramontes and Anna Park, as well as two claimants in our case, very brave claimants, Likit Yuan, as well as Kam Juan Namwichai. Likit is actually accompanied by his daughter, Nampung, which is right here on the side. And we have another claimant, Gon, who's in the audience in the back. Okay, thank you for coming. After the presentations today, we'll open it up for question and answer. And we have reporters on the phone line with us as well. So we'll give you a chance to ask questions as well. And the claimants will be available for interview afterwards. So without ado, I will introduce our Honolulu local director, Tim Riera.
Thank you, Christine. Good morning, and thank you for coming. Many of you look familiar and have covered this story over the past 3 years, along with other EEOC news. As the local director of EEOC's Honolulu local office, I thank you for your commitment to educating the public about federal anti-discrimination employment laws. You are often our connection to the public, and as such, have become an integral local component in our efforts to combat disparities and abuses in the workplace. Today, it is my great pleasure to introduce to you our acting district director, Rosa Viramontes. Rosa oversees our EEOC Los Angeles district, including this office, and traveled from Los Angeles along with our regional attorney, Anna Park. Thank you, Rosa, for being here today for this important announcement.
Good morning. Thank you in advance for your coverage of these significant settlements with Hawaii Farms on a critical civil rights issue, human trafficking. As Mr. Riera mentioned, my name is Rosa Viramontes, and I am the acting district director for the Los Angeles District of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. For those of you less familiar with our agency, the EEOC is a federal civil rights agency that enforces laws against employment discrimination or harassment based on race, national origin, color, sex, religion, age, disability, and genetic information. Under the laws that we enforce, retaliation against those who come forward to report discrimination or harassment is also prohibited. As the acting district director, I oversee the investigation of charges of discrimination filed by the public in our district, which includes the state of Hawaii, Southern and Central California, Southern Nevada, Guam, American Samoa, the Commonwealth of the Northern Mariana Islands, and Wake Island. The Honolulu local office, for which Mr. Riera is the local director, falls within the Los Angeles District. Most of the federal charges filed with our agency start with a complaint by a worker, a group of workers, or a third party who feel they are victims of illegal employment discrimination, harassment, or retaliation. My staff investigates the charges, and ultimately I or one of my local directors, such as Mr. Riera, decide whether there's enough evidence to show reasonable cause that discrimination has occurred. We also provide opportunity to settle or mediate a case administratively. However, where we find evidence of discrimination and are unable to resolve a case administratively, our regional attorney and our legal staff may file a lawsuit on behalf of victims in the public interest throughout our region. One of the
Will the reporters on the line please mute your phones? Our press conference is in process. Thank you.
One of the Commission's strategic enforcement priorities is to protect immigrant, migrant, and other vulnerable workers who are covered under our laws, regardless of immigrant status. Human trafficking tops the list as one of the worst civil rights abuses affecting migrant workers. For the cases that are resolving today, national origin and race discrimination lies at the root of the problem. As the need for agriculture rises, both farm labor contractors and farms are accountable for the way workers brought in from other countries are treated in the U.S. They must ensure that migrant workers, in this case, Thai farm workers, are treated humanely and equally when compared to American workers. Unfortunately, this was not the case here. However, we are proud to announce that the four farms settling our lawsuit today have taken a stand against human trafficking, initiating not only remedies for the hundreds of Thai workers involved, but also implementing preventive measures to ensure that future civil right abuses do not occur. We are hopeful that today's announcement will encourage others in the agricultural industry to adopt similar measures and to watch for potential abuses. All workers, regardless of origin, are entitled to justice and equality in the workplace, which is our agency's vision for our country and our enforcement mandate. I would like to take a moment to thank the incredible team that labored to investigate or assist with the investigation of these cases. First, I thank the Honolulu Local Director, Tim Riera, for his incredible leadership over the tremendous Hawaii team of investigators, attorneys, and support staff. Would all of you raise your hand? I can't say stand. Here they are. Thank you. Thank you for your hard work and your commitment. Likewise, I would like to thank and commend the many Los Angeles staff who also contributed toward the investigation of these cases. Some of them may be listening on the phone, and I applaud their efforts as well. Also in this room are several federal and state representatives who assisted with the investigation of these cases. If you're here when I call your name, would you raise your hand or stand if you're sitting? Terrence Strotter, District Director of the U.S. Department of Labor, Wage and Hour Division. Dwight Takamini, Director of the Hawaii Department of Labor and Industrial Relations. Thank you. William Kuntzman, Assistant to the Director at the Hawaii Department of Labor and Industrial Relations. Thank you. Willem Hoshijo, Executive Director of the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission. Elaine Young, Administrator for the Hawaii Workforce Development Department. Pamela Martin, Administrator for the Wage Standards Division. Pamela Toguchi, Chief Appeals Officer for the Hawaii Employment Security Appeals Referees Office. The Hawaii Immigrant Center at the Legal Aid Society of Hawaii. Thank you. The Native Hawaiian Legal Corporation. And the Hawaii Alliance for Community-Based Economic Development. Thank you for your partnership and your collaborative spirit toward assisting the hundreds of Thai farm workers affected in this case. And lastly, I wholeheartedly salute the workers themselves who found themselves in this situation and found the courage to come forward and to tell their stories in a land foreign to them. Kamjuan, Likit are two claimants here. One driving 3 hours to get here. I applaud your courage and thank you for doing your part to make the industry better for workers now and the years to come. Finally, for members of the public who feel they've been discriminated against, harassed, or retaliated on the job, I would like to relay our telephone number 1-800-669-4000 or our website www.eeoc.gov for more information on how they can get help. I would now like to introduce our regional attorney, Anna Park, who oversees the litigation for our region, who will provide details about the case and the resolution today.
Thank you, and good morning or good afternoon for many of those on the phone. We're pleased to announce that we have finalized the settlement with four of the farms left in the case of EOC versus Global. Those farms are Mac Farms, known as MacNut, be referred here in this case as Mac Farms. Kauai Coffee, known as McBride Resources, Inc., we'll be referring to them as Kauai Coffee because that's where they're named in the complaint. Captain Cook Coffee and Kalena Farms. The various entities who are covered are laid out in the press kits. The specific decrees are in your packages as well. As many of you who have covered this story, which we appreciate greatly, notices of settlements were filed with the four farms in the class action brought by the EOC. The announcements of the specifics we will discuss, but I want to lay out some of the background for those of you who are not aware. The EOC brought suit alleging race, national origin discrimination on a class-wide basis, challenging the severe abuses perpetrated by global supervisors and managers at a number of farms that entered contracts with them. Global sought impoverished Thai nationals to work at these farms, enticing them with false promises of high wages, steady work for 3 years, targeting and recruiting Thai farmers in impoverished areas because they were stereotyped to be docile and compliant. One claimant was told to hide the fact that he had a college degree and to say he only had a fourth grade education. This was Global's marketing technique of what was a, quote, good worker. The workers were subjected to a varying degree of mistreatment, oftentimes occurring on the very farms that were subject of the EOC's case. It started with the workers being charged exorbitant fees, many of whom are still attempting to pay them off, ranging from $9,500 to $26,000, U.S. dollars, and in some instances were renewed every year, some with an interest rate of over 50%. Global did not provide what was promised to these workers. They were constantly threatened, and many of the claimants were sent back to Thailand without ever doing any of the work, or if they even tried to complain. The claimants and their families had no means to repay this debt, face serious economic harm, shame, and humiliation. Global promised the claimants working conditions that complied with U.S. laws, but instead resorted to humiliation, harassment, and intimidation on a daily basis at the hands of their supervisors. Many of the claimants tell stories of being threatened to not talk to outsiders, to not to go out at night, or they'd be sent back to Thailand. They were told, if you cause trouble, too many complaints, or ask too many questions, we'll send you home or transfer you to another farm, unquote. Or, don't let me catch whoever complains, because if I catch you, I'll move you or send you home. Global confiscated unlawfully their identifications and passport and limiting their ability to move around. At each of the farms, claimants speak of being denied basic necessities such as food, water, and habitable housing at the hands of Global. A common theme in varying degrees at each farm was inhabitable housing, insufficient water, the lack of medical attention when they were hurt, suspension, arrest, detention, and at times, deportation. Claimants were forced to work at some of the farms to do jobs they were not brought over to do. Some speak of not having enough water and fainting in the fields. Many of them speak of going hungry, This was a common experience for each of the claimants. They did not have money to buy food, either not paid or paid in time. They went hungry, so they had to hunt for food to sustain themselves. Some speak of using rubber bands and rocks to catch birds so they can eat. Due to the isolation of the farms, many of the claimants were restricted in their ability to access basic necessities. Because they weren't taken to the store, they made primitive slingshots to catch wild chicken so that they can eat. At one farm, the conditions were so bad that the local workers brought food for the Thai claimants. They also lived in overcrowded and inhabitable housing, and this was common to each of them. In some instances, claimants actually complained to entities like the Department of Labor, the Hawaii Occupational Safety and Health Division, the Hawaii Department of Labor. We're very happy that you're all here today to share in our announcement. Yet the violations continued, all fell on deaf ears. They lived in unsanitary conditions. They found pig's blood openly available on the roofs all around their housing because they were trying to sustain an ability to eat. There were bed bugs that plagued them daily and lived in horribly overcrowded conditions. You're going to hear about some of the stories from the brave claimants today. It is the EOC's contention that the farms knew or should have known of these conditions and did something about it. But little was done to stop global. Today's settlement requires now, with the agreement of the farms, that they take action when faced with situations like this. Let me go into the specifics of the settlement. Each of the settlement was crafted with care, addressing the size of the class, the allegations raised by the claimants in each of the cases, and appropriate monetary injunctive remedies. Common to each of the settlement is money that will be distributed by the EOC, sweeping injunctive remedies to ensure accountability of farm labor contractors in the agricultural industry, and to address the specific violations, encompassing training and ensuring that workers in the future understand their rights under U.S. laws. The EOC is focused on training and the development of dissemination of policies to ensure that they are aware of their rights and the avenues to complain to the various organizations here today. The EOC will continue to monitor the progress of the decrees, which vary in term from 2.5 years to 7 years, and they're all laid out in the packages for you. With respect to the money, farms have agreed in varying amounts, which total today $2.4 million, which the EOC will disseminate at its discretion. Mac Farms, with the largest group, will be paying $1.6 million. Kauai Coffee will pay $425,000. Captain Cook will pay $100,000. Kalena will pay $275,000. This totals $2.4 million, and as you all know, Del Monte settled sometime in the past for $1.2 million. That brings the total monetary pool to be $3.6 million, if I did my math right. In addition to the monetary relief today of $2.4 million, Kalena and Captain Cook specifically has agreed to provide jobs to anyone interested in the specific positions at the two farms. The EOC will be strictly monitoring that element of the case if any of the claimants wish to take advantage of that. Specifically, Kalena will be providing 37 full-time positions with generous benefit packages, including health, profit sharing, 401k, and overtime where applicable. These will be offered to anyone who worked at Kalena and later opened up to anyone else who may not have worked there but may wish to go. Again, we'll be strictly monitoring anyone who wished to take advantage of that benefit. And those are full-time jobs. Captain Cook is providing seasonal work. The specifics of the terms of the employment are laid out in the decree. The biggest challenge being the housing, which Captain Cook has agreed to cover the cost of housing, reimbursement of airfare, and that will be 10 positions if anyone wished to take advantage of those. Again, EOC will be monitoring those specifically if anyone wished to take advantage of that. The value of the packages that were negotiated with those two farms, if 47 individuals take advantage of those, is roughly valued about $4.9 million for those positions. Again, these are voluntary, and we'll be strictly monitoring any efforts should anyone wish to take advantage of those. The remaining defendants in the Hawaii case is Global and Maui Pineapple. Maui Pineapple is the only remaining farm, and we will continue to pursue that. Recently, the Federal District Court judge ruled that Global is liable for pattern and practice of discrimination based on race and national origin. This was a huge victory for us, finding liability in our favor. We move on to the damages phase. The trial is set for November 18th on damages against Global, and secondarily, the trial against Maui Pineapple will proceed. In closing, I want to commend the four farms, most importantly for taking corporate responsibility for much of the ills of Global that they entered into contract with. We hope this case brings to light the importance of holding labor contractors accountable and that Title VII obligations are non-delegable. We celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act this year. And we are reminded that the role of the EOC remains ever still relevant today. The core mission of our agency is to eradicate discrimination in the workplace by ensuring equal employment opportunity, regardless of someone's race or national origin. We have found that discrimination is ever evolving, the most sinister of which is modern-day slavery, where people are subject to debt bondage, deprived of basic necessities, and restricted in their ability to move freely. The EOC views these as civil rights violations and will vigorously address them with our civil enforcement. This remains a collective responsibility, both civilly and criminally, and that's why we share in this victory today with our partners at the various state and federal agencies and our collective efforts and also with our non-governmental agencies. I want to specifically thank the assistance of Bill Hoshijo at the Hawaii Civil Rights Commission, without whose assistance we wouldn't be here, and also Bowman Chin and the Hawaii Immigrant Justice Center at the Legal Aid Society of Hawaii. They've been instrumental in keeping our connection with the multitude of claimants, and we thank you for your partnership with us. We stand together to combat trafficking because it is a collective responsibility that we share by whatever means we have. Not that it is our job, but because it is the right thing to do. We will continue to ensure in the employment setting that we shatter stereotypes that cause people to treat others differently and view them as inferior. It is not long ago, as we sit here at the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, that we had a world with separate bathrooms, separate educational systems, and employment closed off to people just because of the color of their skin. The civil rights laws and our very existence as an agency was created to ensure strong federal law enforcement to protect each and every one of us, regardless of immigrant status or their race, and that as Americans, we are guaranteed the ability to compete equally and to have that chance at the American dream. And if you ask any of our claimants, that is all that they wanted, a chance at the American dream. We thank everyone here in making that a reality for our 500 claimants, for a better life, and for freedom. I now want to hand the mic over to our esteemed investigator, Mimi, but I also want to thank our tireless legal staff, Sue No, Derek Lee, Amrita Malik, Lorena Garcia, Lena Williams, Ken Jackson, Tracy Villamret, Lena Williams, I mentioned. Just tireless effort by our legal staff, Connie Leem. So Mimi's going to introduce our claimants and translate. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Mimi Chu, and this is one of our claimants, Likit Yuan.
ผมได้ข่าวเกี่ยวกับงานเกษตรในอเมริกาบริษัทหางานในประเทศไทยนะครับเขาบอกว่าผมจะต้องจ่ายค่าสมัครเป็นเงินจำนวน 350,000 บาทบวกค่าประกันหนีอีกประมาณ 50,000 บาทอย่างไรก็ตามผมจะได้ค่าแรงประมาณ9เหรียญต่อชั่วโมงนะครับพร้อมที่พักฟรีผมคิดว่าผมจะคืนเงินกู้นายหน้าได้ในไม่กี่เดือนและส่งแบบลูกสาวผมได้เรียนหนังสือและสร้างชีวิตที่ดีกว่าให้ครอบครัวจำนวนผมจำนองบ้านเพื่อกู้เงินธนาคารและยืมญาติพี่น้องครับ
I heard about agriculture work in America in Thailand. I was told that the recruitment fee would be 350,000 baht. The rate at that time was 40-1, so it's roughly $8,750 plus 50,000 baht as an insurance against me running away. However, I would earn about $9 plus an hour and free housing. I thought I would be able to pay back the loan for recruitment fee in a few months and send my daughters to school and build a better life for my family. I mortgage my house and get a bank loan and borrow from my relatives.
ผมบินมาฮอนูรูกับคนงานไทยอีก22คนในปี2005หัวหน้างานของโกโบไปรับพวกผมที่สนามบินแล้วยึดพาสปอร์ตหนังสือเดินทางผมถูกส่งไปที่ทำงานที่ฟาร์มเคลีน่ากว่า1ปีผมกับคนงานไทยอีก11คนต้องพักอยู่อพาร์ตเมนต์ที่มีแค่2ห้องนอน1ห้องน้ำเขาไม่มีที่นอนให้ผมและคนงานอีก2คนต้องนอนที่พื้นผมถูกเลือกให้ไปเก็บเกี่ยวกล้วยตอนแรกผมรู้สึกไม่สบายร่างกายผมปวดเมื่อยและผมรู้สึกเหมือนจะเป็นลมผมบอกหัวหน้าแต่ผมก็ยังต้องทำงานต่ออีกครับ
I flew to Honolulu with 22 Thai workers in 2005. A global supervisor picked us up at the airport and took our passports. I was sent to work in Kalena Farm for over a year. I share a 2-bedrooms and 1-bathroom apartment with 11 Thai workers. There were not enough beds. 2 workers and I had to sleep on the floor. I was selected to harvest bananas. In the beginning, I got sick. My body ached and I felt fainted. I told a supervisor, but I still have to continue working.
ผมควรจะได้รับทำงาน5วันต่อสัปดาห์และได้ค่าแรง9เหรียญต่อชั่วโมงแต่ว่าบางครั้งเขาก็ไม่ให้ทำงานทำเป็นหลายอาทิตย์แล้วโกโบยังจ่ายค่าแรงผมช้าอีกผมหมดเงินซื้ออาหารหลังจากเพื่อนๆคนหนึ่งได้ไปร้องเรียนเกี่ยวกับเรื่องพวกนี้เขาก็ทำงานน้อยลงหลังจากนั้นโกโบก็ส่งผมไปที่บิ๊กไอแลนด์แต่รู้สึกว่าเขาจะลืมผมไปทิ้งผมไว้ที่นั่นเลย
I was supposed to work 5 days per week and earn $9 an hour.But sometimes I was not given any work for weeks, and Global often paid me late. I would run out of money to buy food. After one of my friends complained about these issues, he was given less work. And later on, Global sent me to Big Island, but seemed to have forgotten me there.
ผมสามารถหางานได้และพาภรรยาและลูกสองคนมาอยู่ด้วยผมใช้หนี้ธนาคารหมดแล้วแต่ยังผ่อนใช้ทางญาติอยู่ครับ
I was able to find work and brought over my wife and two daughters. I paid off the bank loan, but I'm still making payments to my relatives.
ผมรู้สึกขอบคุณที่ EOC สามารถช่วยผมและคนงานไทยทั้งหมดผมหวังว่า EOC จะสามารถดำเนินการช่วยเหลือคนงานที่ไม่มีทางสู้อย่างพวกผมผมรู้สึกขอบคุณและเอาใจช่วยอยู่ข้างหลังผมรู้สึกปลอดโปร่งหลังจากที่ผมได้ออกจาก Global ผมไม่ต้องกังวลว่าจะไม่มีงานพอหรือถูกในประเทศจะไม่ได้รับค่าแรงอีกเหมือนเดิมจะไม่มีอาหารกินและรู้สึกเหมือนถูกกักขังเนื่องจากกฎบ้านทั้งหลายและไม่มีหนังสือเดินทาง
I'm thankful to the EOC that EOC was able to help me and others.I felt relief after leaving Global. I don't have to worry about not having enough food, being deported, not receiving my wages, not having food to eat, or felt trapped because of all the house rules and not having my passport.
ผมอยากจะสนับสนุนให้ผู้อื่นที่ได้รับประสบการณ์อย่างผมว่าไม่ต้องกลัวและให้ความช่วยเหลือจากEOC ครับผม
I want to encourage others who experience what I experienced not to be afraid and to seek help from the EOC. Thank you.
ขอบคุณครับ
คุณลิขิตมีอะไรจะพูดอีกหรือเปล่าคะจากใจจริงอย่างเช่นว่าตอนนี้ลูกสาวได้มาแล้วเรียนหนังสือหรือว่าแล้วอนาคตคุณลิขิตคิดยังไงคะ
ก็อยากจะให้ลูกสาวเรียนให้จบ
He wishes to have his daughter finish her education.
ถ้าไม่มีใครจะพูดไม่รู้จะพูดอะไร
Our next claimant is Kam Juan.
สวัสดีครับผมได้ข่าวเกี่ยวกับงานเกษตรในอเมริกาจากบริษัทหางานในประเทศไทยเขาบอกว่าต้องการเงิน6,500เป็นค่าสมัครแต่ผมจะได้รับค่าแรงอย่างน้อย 6,000 ต่อเดือน 60,000 ต่อเดือนในอเมริกา ผมคิดว่าผมจะสามารถคืนเงิน 60,000 ที่ยืมได้ในไม่ถึงปีผมคิดว่าผมจะมีรายได้ที่ดีกว่าตอนที่ผมอยู่เป็นชาวนาในประเทศไทยและสามารถสร้างชีวิตที่ดีสร้างสำหรับตัวเองและครอบครัวผมใช้เงินเก็บสะสมทั้งหมดและกู้จากธนาคารและนายหน้าในหมู่บ้านผมไปจ่ายค่าสมัคร
I heard about agriculture work in America from a recruitment company in Thailand. I was told that I had to pay 650,000 baht. At that time, the rate was also 40-1, which amount to $16,500 in recruitment fee. But I would make at least 60,000 baht per month in America. That's $1,500. I thought I would be able to pay back the 600,000 baht that I borrowed in less than a year. I thought I would be able to earn good money and provide better life for myself and my family than I ever could as a rice farmer in Thailand. I used all of my savings and borrowed money from the bank and local lender in my village to pay the recruitment fees.
ผมบินไปลอสแองเจลิสกับคนงานไทยอื่นๆในปี 2004จากนั้นก็บินไปแอตแลนต้าแล้วนั่งรถไปนอร์ทคาโรไลนาเพื่อเริ่มงานทันทีที่เราไปถึงแอตแลนต้าโกบอลก็ยึดหนังสือเดินทางทั้งหมดผมขอหนังสือเดินทางคืนแต่เขาไม่ให้เขายังบอกว่าพวกเราอาจโดนจับเพราะไม่มีหนังสือเดินทางดังนั้นเราต้องอยู่กับหัวหน้าของโกบอลตลอดเวลา
I flew to Los Angeles with other Thai workers in 2004. From LA, we were flown to Atlanta and then driven to North Carolina to begin working. As soon as we got to Atlanta, our passports and travel documents were taken by Global. I asked for my passport back, but they told me no. They told us that we could get arrested without our passports, so we had to try to stay with the Global supervisors at all times.
โกโบลย้ายผมมาฮาวายในปี2004ตอนแรกผมมาทำที่มาวี่พายแอปเปิลหลังจากนั้นผมก็ถูกย้ายไปทำงานที่แม็กฟาร์มที่บิ๊กไอแลนด์ผมทำงานที่บิ๊กไอแลนด์ปี2005ถึงปี2006ผมและคนงานไทยอีก26คนต้องพักอยู่ในบ้านที่มีแมลงเต็มไปหมดแออัดและมีแค่ห้องน้ำเดียวรถบัสที่โกบอลใช้ส่งเราไปทำงานก็แออัดบางทีตอนรถเสียเราก็ต้องนั่งรถขนส่งเราต้องซื้ออาหารเองและโกบอลก็หักเงินค่าแรงของเราเพื่อเป็นค่ารถพาพวกเราไปตลาดซื้อของงานที่เราทำเป็นงานหนักค่าแรงของเราก็ต่ำแล้วเขายังปฏิบัติไม่ดีกับเรามันไม่เหมือนกับที่เขาสัญญาไว้
In 2004, Global moved me to Hawaii. I first worked at Maui Pineapple Company, and then I was moved to Big Island to work for Mac Farms. I worked on the Big Island from 2005 to until 2006. I was made to live in a crowded, bug-filled house where I had to share one bathroom with 26 other Thai workers. The bus that Global used to take us to the work site was also crowded.Sometimes when the bus was broken, we were forced to ride in the dump truck. We had to buy food for ourselves, and Global would deduct the money from our paycheck to cover the transportation when they took us to the store. It was hard work. We were underpaid and treated very poorly. It was not what I was promised at all.
ผมเลิกทำงานกับโคบอลในปี2006ผมหางานได้ผมมีความรู้สึกดีกับงานที่ผมทำและรู้สึกว่าผมสามารถควบคุมชีวิตของตัวเองผมสามารถพาภรรยาและลูก2คนมาอยู่ด้วยผมยังเป็นหนี้ค่า สมัครที่เมืองไทยแต่ผมกำลังผ่อนส่งอยู
่ I stopped working for Global in 2006 I found different jobs I felt good about the work I do and I feel like I'm now in control of my own life I have been able to bring over my wife and 2 childrenI still owe the money for my recruitment debt in Thailand, but I am working towards paying it off.
ผมรู้สึกขอบคุณที่ EEOC
คุณคำชวนครับคุณคำชวนอ่านแค่คำสุดท้ายนี้ก็ได้ครับ
ก็ได้ผมอยากจะสนับสนุนให้ผู้อื่นอยู่ให้ผู้อื่นที่ได้รับประสบการณ์อย่างผมว่าไม่ต้องกลัวและให้ความช่วยเหลือจาก EEOC ครับผม
I want to encourage others who experience what I experienced to not be afraid and seek help from the EEOC. Thank you.
คุณคำชวนมีอะไรส่วนตัวจะพูดไหมคะ
ไม่มีครับ
Thank you very much, Mimi, Kam Chuan, and Likit. This time we'll open up the floor for Q&A from first the reporters in the room.Do you have any questions, Jennifer?
How are you guys going to distribute the settlement funds among the workers?
The question for the folks on the phone is, how are we going to distribute the settlement funds among the workers?
It will be determined based upon, first of all, if they had worked at that farm, and also we'll have to balance the time frame, the severity of what they experienced,and also how many of the claimants will come forward. So we're in the process, we will have to go through a process of a claims process and then distribute accordingly.
Attorney Park, if I did my math right, 2.4 million divided by 500, is that 4,800 apiece?
That's not how we're going to distribute it. I mean, we could do that, but we also have 1.2 million out there as well from the previous settlement, so 3.6. So we'll have to, the way we normally go about evaluating is we have to make an individualized assessment. So it'll be a process.
You also mentioned sweeping injunctive remedies.
Yes.
Can you expound on that, please?
The question was to expound on sweeping injunctive remedies in case you can't hear on the phone.
So in our region, agriculture is a very dominant industry, not just here but also in California.And what we have found, not just in regard to national origin race issues, but gender issues, sexual harassment issues, oftentimes farms are not holding farm labor contractors accountable. So they hide behind the use of farm labor contractors and not taking any action. So, for example, we have often heard of women being raped in the fields.Nothing being done about it, or farms saying none of that happens. There are no policies or procedures established as required under federal law. The importance of these settlements really speaks to holding farm labor contractors accountable. If you look at the decree, there are various points in which farms are now requiring farm labor contractors to disseminate policies to make sure they investigate. Farms themselves will be disseminating policies and making sure thatthey train their own people. What was previously viewed as an arm's length relationship, we have insisted and we commend the farms to really take a step towards holding these farm labor contractors accountable. And I think that's very important because this is something that we have seen over and over time and time again, not just in national origin issues, but in gender issues. And we hope that the industry...will change the way they do business in that regard. So we commend the farms, many of them pretty large operations, Del Monte, Kauai Coffee, for example. We hope will set the stage for change.
Last question. Since I haven't been covering this much, what happened to Alun Farms?
Question was, what happened to Alun Farms?
Well, the EEOC never pursued a case on that. I believe there was some effort by Justice.With regard to criminal proceedings, but that wasn't us. So there wasn't anything we did to bring that case to
There were complaints
fruition.
Filed, though, against Olin by workers. Can you tell us the status of that?
We can't speak to any charges unless the only time we can talk about that is if we file litigation with it, and there's no litigation pursued in that regard. You can probably speak to the workers themselves, but at this point we can't speak about anything that's confidential.
We'll go here first.
I have a similar question from the internet. If the EOC will be pursuing charges against Alun Farm, and if not, why not?
Will the EOC be pursuing charges against Alun Farms, and if not, why not, is the question.
That's not the case before us right now. To sort of express why we do and don't bring charges would express deliberative process. But a lot of that is also the extent of the timeliness of these actions also. If they're brought to our attention too late, hypothetically speaking, there's very little that we can do about it. There are 300, someone needs to file a charge with the EOC within 300 days of the act. That is a hard date set by Congress. We do, under pattern practice, go farther. But if the charge coming through that door doesn't fit that, we have no jurisdiction. So without speaking to that, I think just be mindful. It's important if people do feel their civil rights violated that they come to us early. Yes.
Thank you for all your hard work on this very important case. My name is Catherine Gian with the Pacific Alliance for South Slavery. We represent a lot of the Alun Farm victims, and according to them, they did come to the EOC early on, within that 300-day time frame. My question is similar to Mary's and Mary's. What was the criteria that excluded them from investigation, further investigation of Alun Farms?
We have a representative here from the Pacific Alliance Against Slavery, correct?
To stop slavery,
and she's saying that they do represent some of the claimants in the Alun Farms matter, and she's asking why the EEOC did not pursue charges against Alun Farms.
We can speak later, and we can't divulge confidential information in regard to charges, but what I can tell you is if we felt we could, we have brought cases. If we felt we couldn't, we haven't. That's not to say if, for example, the claimants may have worked at some farms not covered, but are covered, and many of these people worked at a number of these farms, so they will take from the pot if they had worked for the farm. So I'm not really in a position, nor do I want to talk about cases that is not subject of the litigation at this point, but I'd be happy to talk about that offline.
Excuse me, one last question.
Yes.
Is it true that if it weren't for the Alun Farms plaintiffs, that the global climate would never have been brought to life?
That is not true.
Question, it had not been for the Alun Farms claimants that the EOC would not have pursued these other charges.
And that is not true. I think there were multiple farms, a mass investigation, and while I feel sympathy for the Alun Farms people, that is not the subject of our lawsuit, unfortunately.
Can I talk about the timeline? These incidents happened between 2003 and 2007, and you mentioned there were several agencies involved. Why does it take 5 years, you know, and then 7 years to finally get to the end result of this case? And it's still not done.
The question was for timing. Why does it take so long to get to the EOC and so long for us to proceed with investigating and litigation, right?
Well, our, as Ms. Viermont has talked about, until someone comes through that door and comes to us, we can't initiate unless we have a commissioner's charge or something to that effect to open investigation. Our case is very much driven by the charges that come through the door. And if we find there's a class of individuals, we expand that investigation. And that's what happened here. We had a handful of charges, people coming through the door, and then we discovered what we find a pattern and practice, sort of not just here in Hawaii, but all throughout continental U.S. So that's part of the reason. Also, obviously, manpower is another. There were great barriers based on language capacity, and we thank the partners we've had in the nonprofit world to assist us. I know the Thai Community Development Center was key in that. Hawaii Legal Aid, Immigrant Justice was critical in that. So it is one of these things that unfortunately justice moves slowly, but once we do file, we're very vigorous in our approach and our enforcement of our statutes.
You mentioned that you
basic investigation that a lot of these farms here knew or knew to a certain extent what was going on. How would you describe, based on your investigation, just how much you believe some of these farms knew about what was going on?
A question from the back was, how do we know the extent to which the farms knew about some of the abuses that were happening? And how would you describe the extent of the abuse that was happening on the farms?
Some of the farms, the managers were there and engaged in some of the acts. They visited the housing, so they were eminently aware of the conditions that the individuals lived in. They directed, oftentimes, with global supervisors standing next to them, because it's their farm, it's their work, they knew exactly and controlled their work day to day. The medical conditions was mixed as far as maybe they knew. Some of the farms, global was less prevalent, so it was all at the hands of their own managers. So it's in varying degrees. At the end of the day, the EOC's position is you knew or should have known. You as a joint employer or direct employer, many of them will say they're not direct employers, they were employees of Global, but either way, under the joint employer theory, it is our position that farms can't turn a blind eye to what's happening on your land.
You know, you talked about the amount of manpower you have and why this takes oftentimes a lot longer than you want because of that fact. So now you're imposing stricter guidelines and rules for these farms to follow. If you don't have people coming forward, how then are you going to ensure this is actually going to happen?
The question was, if we don't have people coming forward, how are we going to ensure that there's going to have compliance, right, with the laws, with the stipulations that we put in place?
You mean coming forward to collect money or just coming forward to complain? I'm sorry. To complain. I think that's a very important point. We do a lot of community education because of that. We do a lot of training. The case actually came to me because of our work in the area of human trafficking with nonprofits, where they direct provide services, and having that trust to send them to organizations like us to say, hey, can you do something for them? So, to that extent, we encourage people to get the word out to say, and not just the EOC, there are many agencies, as you see here today, that are willing to help individuals that are faced with issues like this.
I'm sorry, I think more so I mean referring to the farms themselves to make sure they're compliant.
The question is more, how are we going to make sure that the farms themselves are complying?
Oh, I see, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. So the decree lays out, and that is a key component of the EOC's charge. We will be monitoring their efforts. There is very specific reporting mechanisms in the decree. They will present us reports of investigations, how they're interacting with farm labor contractors, and it's spelled out pretty in detail, the decree itself. We also have, in some of the instances, the farms, they're hiring monitors, which is something we do in most of our decrees. They have to hire a third-party neutral to act as an independent monitor over their day-to-day actions related to the things that we want covered. A lot of it around training, reporting, monitoring is a very important component of the decree. But thank you for that question. Yes?
What went on from when the settlements were reached to today when the details are announced?
What went on between the date that the settlements were actually reached and today's announcement?
A lot of negotiating. There were a lot of details that were being finalized. As you can see, the agreement is very comprehensive. We may have agreed on a monetary amount, but the specifics were negotiated right to the end.
I think the settlements were reached last year?
The settlements reached last year, end of last year?
The complete settlements are complete when it's filed with the court. So aspects are settled as we go. Not all of it was locked in until it's filed and signed by the court, actually.
And that happened today?
Yes. So we're waiting for the court to approve the consent decrees. And that's a very important component of this case, that these aren't private settlements. This is something that will be monitored by the Federal District Court during the term of the decree. Any violations, it's then now left to the court to decide whether they're in compliance. So that is the form of all of our settlements. It's a consent decree, not any private settlements. I think she had a follow-up.
Maybe a follow-up.
I'm sorry.
Maui Pineapple, is there a trial date?
Is there a trial date for Maui Pineapple?
Yes, November 18th of this year.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any other cases against Global that are active that you're pursuing?
Are there any other cases against Global that were that are still active in pursuing?
We filed a similar action in Washington State. We have a motion pending with that court as well on liability against Global. We did pursue an action against the two farms there. Recently, the court ruled against us, and we're now contemplating appeal. There is still part of the case already on appeal around the discoverability of immigration status. It is our position that the status is irrelevant and can't be used in any means or form in our litigation, and that is now before the Ninth Circuit to be addressed.
There's a question in the back here.
I'm seeking the status of the claimants and the supervisors. So are the majority of the claimants still here, you know, in the state, or did they go back home? And were the supervisors let go, or are they still there?
What is the status of the claimants, whether they're still here, went back home, and the supervisors, are they still working or have they been let go?
The supervisors, I don't know. I know Captain Cook, for sure that supervisor is gone. I believe the Global supervisors are no longer with Global. It's hard to tell one way or another with Global. The claimants are scattered all throughout the United States. Some have returned to Thailand. We do keep in contact with them, but as in any sort of migrant workforce, you know, they're always on the move, so we do try to keep in contact. There's a large contingency, for example, in Utah and in Los Angeles, and they're scattered throughout the various islands.
And my final question for the two claimants that are here today, if they could offer up some words of how they feel today, so many years later.
So the question is, for the claimants that are here today, can you offer up some words about how they feel today?
He said it's been a really long time for the case, and he's really happy that we have today.
ผมรู้สึกดีใจที่พวก EOC ช่วยเหล
ือ He said he's really Kam Chuan said that he's really happy that EEOC were able to help him.
I'd like to give a chance for the oh I'm sorry was there's one more question here?
Yes. When will the money be distributed to the workers?
When will the money be distributed to the workers?
We started the process of distribution with one of the pool of money. We hope to get most of that rolled out in the next 6 months. Because they're just filed, those that have just been filed, we need to make sure we go through some type of claims process for those that may wish to still come forward.
Okay, one last question here, and then we'll go to the phone. One back here.
Will 100% of the money be going to the workers?
Will 100% of the money be going to the workers?
Absolutely. The EOC takes none of the money. Our services are free. We litigate in the public interest. We take nothing. And actually, the money goes directly to them. We do not touch the money.
I have a public service question. Who bears the burden of proof? Does the EOC have to prove that these contract employers were at fault? Or, I mean, do we recommend that laborers take pictures? What process do we go through?
Who bears the burden of proof? What is the process? Does EEOC bear the burden of proving, or do laborers have to go and do we recommend to take pictures?
The burden of, we are a plaintiff when we file our federal court action. Plaintiffs always, I would say practically speaking, bear the burden to present their case. The standard of proof is different in a criminal versus civil matter. The standard of proof is preponderance or clear and convincing as opposed to criminal, which is beyond a reasonable doubt. So the standard is lower, but we still have to convince a jury, a judge, that what happened is true. With respect to evidence, if we open an investigation, we go out and take a look at what happened. We interview claimants. But certainly, like in any case, we encourage individuals to preserve their evidence. But certainly, like in here, our investigators went out and visited the farms, as I'm sure the Department of Labor did as well and some of the other agencies. So that's what we do. Thank you.
And for the reporters on the phone, do you have any follow-up questions?
Hi, this is Tom LaVenture of the Garden. Without having the packet in front of me that you mentioned earlier, I was curious if you could provide more detail on the Kauai Coffee $400,000 settlement as to what that pertained to, housing or working conditions or any other particular information.
Tom, we can talk to you afterwards offline. Would that work for you?
Yes, thank you.
Any other questions from the phone? Okay. We'll have the claimants and the officials here available for interview. People on the phone, please stay on the line. I'd like to get all of your names and do some follow-up with you as well. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your time and your coverage of this very important story.
Thank you.
Oh, the spelling.
Oh, yeah.
Let me announce the spelling. I was surprised no one asked that question.
Oh, we don't want to.
Okay, Kamjuan Namwicha is K. K-H-A-M-J-U-A-N, first name.
Wait, K-H-A-M.
K-H-A-M-J-U-A-N, Kamjuan Namwicha is the last name. N-A-M as in Mary, W-I-C-H-A-I.
And how old is he?
How old is Kamjuan?
53
years old.
This is
Kamjuan the Yellow. And then Likit Yuan. Likit is L-I-K-H-I-T as in Tom. Last name Yuan, Y-O-O hyphen O-N.
Y-O-O.
I need that again if that's Tom.
Okay, Likit is L-I-K-H-I-T, first name. Last name is Y-O-O hyphen O-N. Yuan.
And how old is Likit? How old are you?
43 years old.
And from where are they in Thailand?
From where in Thailand?
Udon.
And?
Sukhothai.
Where?
Sukhothai.
Okay.
That's what? Central, south?
North.
Both from north?
Hi, for the folks on the line, is anyone left? Do I have Kevin still on there?
Tom LaVenture's still here.
Tom's still here. Okay, so Tom, the only reason I had you offline is because people here got packets. I can send you the consent decrees separately, Tom.
Yeah, if that's electronically, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, I'll send it to you electronically. And then do you want to have any interviews with the claimants or with the officials that are here today?
AI?
Or are you fine with what you have?
If none of the three claimants worked in Kauai, then it wouldn't be really relevant, I guess. But at least I didn't hear the word Kauai come up. So
let me double check.
I think if you're going to explain to me offline the. They want to offer any more detail on the Kauai Coffee situation, because I heard, I got the story from them that they weren't aware and that their conditions there weren't the same as they were in the other islands. And
right.
They still were the settlement, and there was something to explain about what occurred there.
Right. Okay, hold on just a moment.
He has one boy, 21.
Daughter. Why don't I call you back, Tom?